Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome into the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Downey. He is Sean Fitz, and we are back with another episode during game week number four here on the Penn State Nittany Lions schedule. Villanova comes to town this weekend. It's an FCS opponent. Expectations are in place for a significant margin of victory for Penn State that would send them to 4-0. But this Wildcats squad is one of the more respected programs out of that FCS level. We will learn more about them with longtime Wildcats beat reporter Terry Tuohy. He will be our guest on the episode. Hopefully you heard episode number one of the week with Brian Doan, fantastic national recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports, was kind enough to join Sean for a long conversation, catching you up on what happened on Whiteout weekend from a recruiting perspective. We're going to turn the page back and start to talk about coming out of this Auburn game and moving toward the Villanova game. But again, a fantastic listen, Sean. Always good to get Brian Doan, and I'm glad that you two were able to coordinate that with me stepping aside for that episode.
We love our conversations with Doan. It's all on the fly. We don't have a rundown. We don't have anything. And that, you know, kind of puts us in a corner at times. But at the same time, the conversational aspect of it, always really good. By the way, we're hoping we fixed the audio issue. We got you some feedback from some of you guys. Apologies. That's on my wife or kids who have been messing with my dials. So I will throw them right under the bus. And hopefully we have better sound for you today on this episode and moving forward. And we'll just keep our hands off of that if we're my wife or kids. But focusing on Villanova, you sort of turn the page from Auburn right now. Obviously, different levels of focus, mainly for the fan. You know, the players are going to talk about being 1-0 this week. But you move forward, you avoid any talk of a trap game. Not that this would be it, but it's a really good Villanova squad. And in terms of the FCS level, experienced quarterback, good running game. So they've done some work over the first 3 weeks. And that's it's not going to be a squad that comes in here and lays down.
No, James Franklin laid out the accolades for this Villanova program. He does this every week, very complimentary of whoever that opponent is. But you know, Villanova has a bunch of playoff appearances at the FCS level, formerly Division I AA. They're currently number 11 in the FCS rankings at 3-0. Couple blowout victories, a closer margin for the win last week against Richmond. Again, we'll hear a lot more about Villanova coming up. Penn State hosting them for twice here in the upcoming years. They have not played in a long time. We'll talk about that history in a little while. But Sean, bringing it back here to Penn State, some roster talk this week, and a couple of things that stood out to me, and two stories that I actually wrote up on the site at Lions247.com on Tuesday. Tyler Warren, John Lovett, certainly different pathways to this point at Penn State, and they don't pop off that box score when you look at the stats from Saturday night. Obviously, Tyler Warren got in the end zone. Anyone who scores a touchdown is going to stand out. But I think it was 50 combined yards for the two of these players. Context, though, is key in their involvement.
Yeah, I like what we saw from both of those guys. You know, it's funny, they went to the Wildcat, whatever it was, in the second time after it was successful the first time. And you wonder if you go back to the well too often, but you got points out of it the first time, why not try it again? And like I mentioned in the post game, there was a root involved there. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was ready to throw that ball to Brenton Strange, his up back. It's always fun to see those things take shape. Obviously he was a quarterback committed to Virginia Tech to play quarterback. He wasn't, no disrespect to Tyler Warren, was not an FBS quarterback prospect, really, really good athlete, but not a quarterback. So it's cool that they're working him in there. He's obviously had the ball in his hands before, which is, it makes a difference taking snaps and things like that. Like I said the other night, he's 6'6", 260, I think he is listed at now. To see that going over the top is definitely fun. So it's another aspect of that offense. As I mentioned, Mike Yurcich just throwing a lot at the wall. Not saying that he's throwing at the wall just to try and make it stick, but there's a lot going up there, and there's a lot of different formations and personnel groupings. I mean, we've seen three tight ends a bunch, but not in a bunch formation as much as you would think. So just having that group being so versatile, having Strange and Theo Johnson being able to essentially be wide receivers for you and change some things up. I mean, we saw that with that one particular, screen grab that everybody's been gathering over the last couple of days with Brenton Strange lined up at left tackle. And this is coming on the other guy you were talking about coming on the heels of an 18-yard catch from John Lovett. But with Strange playing left tackle and Caden Wallace split out wide, and much respect to Caden Wallace for selling the hell out of that bubble screen. It's just fun to see different things like that. And if you can make defenses think, we've seen it 100 times. If you can make defenses think, and we've seen it on the other side too, if you made Penn State's defense think, they struggle. But it's just fun football. And to see Brenton Strange streaking down just tells you what you can do with your tight ends, tells you what you can do with your personnel situations and substitutions and things like that. It's just more fun to have those options. And Yurcich, over the years, hasn't involved tight ends as much as you would think, or as much as you would think, given the tight end talent in the room at Penn State. So he's figuring out a way, and looks like he's growing within himself to figure out a way to get those guys the ball.
Fun is a great way to describe what we've seen. And clearly the first half at Wisconsin was not the tone setter for this offense, because that was stagnant and that was depressing. And you thought, if this is what we're covering for the next several games, this is going to be tough.
You remember the tone setter for the 2020 offense. So, I mean, that was a little bit flip the script there.
Right. And so I think when you look at where this group is trending in the tight end room, you're seeing Yurcich be able to dip into that group and put them here, there, and everywhere. Theo Johnson, though, called this package Tyler's baby. It sounds like this is really exclusively tailored to what he does from a skill set standpoint. Like you said, 6'6". I think he's listed 252. Wouldn't surprise me if he's pushing 260, though. This guy launching over Caden Wallace, who is a large fella. Meanwhile, who's there on the right side sealing off the edge? It's Brenton Strange. Who's in the left side blocking? It's Theo Johnson. You've got Sean Clifford lined out wide. And Sean Clifford said this: that's just a glimpse. This is a pretty deep package that they want to implement. I don't know if we see it pop up first quarter against Villanova. We may not see it pop up until fourth quarter in Columbus against Ohio State. But now every team on the remaining schedule for Penn State has to account for Tyler Warren being a bit of a versatile weapon in that backfield, and certainly a tight end as well. He caught a 22-yard pass, and I think he's just getting started for what he can be as a receiver.
He's going to throw the ball at some point. I don't think there's any question about that. It's a matter of time, in my opinion. But I will say, for Villanova, you want to see Taquan Roberson taking snaps, Christian Veyer taking snaps, maybe even Mason Stahl taking some snaps if you can get there. I don't want to say waste it on Villanova, but you don't want to see Tyler Warren, you don't want to have to go gimmick in this game. So I appreciate that. And I don't know if people get how big these guys are. When we're sitting there after practice, and the tight ends are usually one of the last groups out of there, Brenton Strange is a big guy. He's pushing 6'4", but Theo Johnson at 6'7", Tyler Warren at 6'6 plus. I mean, even Grayson Klein, the walk-on's a really big guy, but they can move, and that's something that gives your offense so much more depth and versatility, and it's really fun to watch. And after the first couple of weeks, there were questions about whether or not Penn State was utilizing its tight ends, whether they were maximizing what they had at tight end, and whether those tight ends were maximizing the opportunities that they had gotten. Let's not just put this all on one side here. But it was phenomenal to watch the other night. They were involved in every facet, and just, they can do so much for you.
Tyler Warren, amazing testing numbers in high school. It was a big part of the reason why people bought into him as a tight end long-term, despite the lack of evidence on the high school field. Recently updated the big board at Penn State from his winter production in testing, a 4.64 40-yard dash at that size, also 550-pound max squat. Theo Johnson, you mentioned him, 4.51 40-yard dash. There's a lot of talent in that room. We know that. Over to the running back room, where there is a lot of talent and things are evolving, because John Lovett has thrust himself into the mix wearing number 10 instead of number 23. And he ended up finishing second behind Noah King when all was said and done among running backs in total yards against Auburn. Pretty modest stat line, 3 catches, 27 yards. But one of those was an 18-yard catch and run where, you know, he had good vision following his lead blockers, let some things set up, but also showed some burst, showed some agility. Saw some comments on the story that I put up yesterday that he was looking fast on the field, and that flashed to some people. Noah Kane averaging about 3.4 yards per carry. Kevon Lee took a seat last Saturday after fumbling the ball and recovering it himself. Devin Ford was relegated to kick return duties, and Kazai Holmes is with the developmental squad. This all leads me to believe arrow pointing up for John Lovett, despite the mysterious absence that got even more mysterious somehow during James Franklin's press conference on Tuesday.
So Noah Kane and Kevon Lee look somewhat similar when they're running the ball. Big guys that, you know, I think Kane is still coming along in terms of getting comfortable in there, and Lee's got to hold on to the football, but Lovett looks different. Lovett looks like a different, different style of attacking, and, you know, bigger than Devin Ford, no doubt about it. And I think that plays into a part of it. But you saw him shake loose on that 18-yard catch and run, got involved there in crunch time. I'm also very curious about the number switch, for that yes. to pop up the week that they play a quarterback with a number 10. And I think Lovett's worn 10 before. I don't know that off the top of my head, but I feel like I've seen that somewhere. It's just very, very interesting how that all worked out. So
I don't know if Auburn found out before you did, but when did you find out, Sean?
Found out in the pregame. Yeah, we talked about it after practice the other night. I was like, hey, he's wearing 10. Maybe he's at that point, he seemed like he was relegated to the back of the line still. And maybe, like I said, maybe a little playing possum and seeing what happens. So, you know, we've mentioned before that college football coaches often overthink these type of things. Maybe that's what they were doing, and maybe it worked, and maybe it worked out for everybody on Penn State's side. So it's a story that does not matter, but it's very interesting to me. And there's a lot of those out there. So, but I like what I saw from Lovett. Just gives you a different gear. Interested to see some of those guys maybe get a little bit more space and try and hit the open field. And that's really how the running game has been. I don't want to call it a disappointment, but it's fallen short of expectations so far. And you would like to see them get going a little bit more in the open field. I think, handing the ball off, not just catching the ball and running.
Sure feels like this is an opportunity for a get right game for that backfield in terms of getting some numbers up, getting some wheels turning in the right direction. Some of these guys have had a little bit of trouble coming out the gates. You'd like to see momentum built up for Noah Kane. He does have 3 touchdowns, but not seeing him as efficient as we've become accustomed to early in his career. Kevon Lee, you want to see him handle that ball, that security, and you want to see him get in the open field and run behind his pads, and hopefully more of John Lovett as well. When we look at Lovett, though, I'm going to go back to the mystery here. The 2-game absence, we did not, we were not informed along the way. Jaywon Sider, as we said, didn't touch it when he was asked about it last week. John Lovett was on the practice field each week as we saw him leading up to those first couple games, and then ultimately not in uniform for those games. That changed last week. James Franklin was asked during the press conference on Tuesday about a broadcast comment from Chris Fowler, who does the play-by-play for ESPN. He said in the third quarter that Lovett, it was due to disciplinary actions. And when this was said to Franklin, shockingly, Franklin apparently was blindsided by this. I'm surprised by that all this time later. But he says that statement, he doesn't know where it came from. They were going to get to the bottom of it. Sounded like that was going to be the first phone call he made coming out of the press conference, was to figure out where that Lovett information came up and why it was mentioned on the broadcast. So no confirmation of anything right now, but he did say something that stuck out to me. He said they were waiting for the right time and place to use John Lovett. Made it sound voluntary. I can't see how that would work with a fifth-year senior coming to campus and just stepping aside for 2 games. If it is, it's a heck of a sacrifice, but to me, there's just a lot more in here, and for whatever reason, James Franklin can't go public on it.
Yeah, and it's an internal thing that I have no mm-hmm. problem with them not going public with it. It's funny though, because they have these, especially for the big games, they have these weeks leading up, or the weeks leading up to the game, they've got the production meetings and the broadcast crew is in there, and you talk to so many people, and typically, you can get that information and they're okay with that, saying, maybe it was out for a day or two. This clearly was not cleared from Penn State. It was probably just brought up in conversation with one of the people that were in the building, and Chris Fowler ran with it, because Franklin doesn't do that very often. He doesn't respond like that very often. I mean, sometimes it's just one of those things where you get your information. That's great. But he did not seem too pleased about that one. But it's in the past, doesn't matter. But it's just another side that we saw in that Tuesday press conference.
Yeah, we also saw Keaton Ellis back on the field, as we mentioned. Hakeem Beamon actually popping up on the developmental squad players of the week list this week. So did Keziah Holmes at running back. So just something to note there. We have not seen Beamon in action through 3 weeks. Holmes currently seems to be working as the number 5 running back on the depth chart. What do you make of that? I talked about this before a little bit, but it feels like Keziah Holmes, Jaywon Sider, this coaching staff on the same page. This is a developmental year for him to really grow as a complete running back and do that at a different pace than what he was able to do it with all the injuries and all the issues that were in front of him on the depth chart last year. So I think that's in a good place. Developmental squad honors. When you see Hakeem Beamon on that list, it hits different, though, because it's just a different circumstance.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're just kind of sitting and waiting for him to come back. I mean, we saw him at practice last week, which is a step forward for Beeman. See him on the developmental side means somewhat buying into it. So that's hopefully, you know, he continues to work in the right direction because they can use him, especially, you know, with Iowa looming on the schedule in a couple of weeks. You can use a guy like that in the middle of your defense. So we'll see what happens with that. Kaziah Holmes, again, I think I said it last week, just has to continue to trust the process, just has to be a situation where he needs to understand what's in front of him and understand where his developmental track is and just continue to go with it, because that's a long time to sit, especially that far away from home. Even when you got the taste of playing last year. So be interesting to see what his off season looks like. You know, you're curious to see what this running back room looks like in 6 weeks, let alone 6 months. But Holmes is probably a fascinating subplot of that, especially with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen set to come in for the 2022 season.
Once again, we expect to see a bunch of running backs involved on Saturday against Villanova. We're going to get a chance to talk about the Wildcats. We're coming to town for that matchup right now with Terry Toohey of the Delaware County Daily Times. He has covered the Wildcats for a long time, and we are grateful to get his perspective on a game week here. Terry, I know you're kind of in between media availabilities on your beat right now, so we appreciate you taking some time to talk about this upcoming game.
No problem, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are talking about a 3-0 Penn State team. Everyone's really excited about this squad here in Happy Valley. Meanwhile, Villanova also 3-0, up to number 11 in the FCS polls. What stands out early through three games? What's working well for the Wildcats?
Well, offensively, it has to be their running game. They have a stable of four running backs led by a six-year senior, Justin Covington, and D. Will Barley. You know, their primary attack is the run. Then they have a sixth-year quarterback in Dan Smith, who was they transferred in a few years ago. And on the defensive side of the ball, they have 11 takeaways in three games. They have, I think it's 8 interceptions and 3 fumble recoveries. So it's an opportunistic defense.
I'm looking at
some old. Oops, sorry, Tyler. You got some old guys over there. Daniel Smith, 23 years old. What do you think that's going to bring to, or what do you think that's going to help Villanova with? An experienced guy, started at Campbell, as you said, transferred to Villanova. So there's he's played a lot of football, has been very successful at that. How do you think that's going to help them handle the situation walking into Beaver Stadium?
Well, I think what it's going to do is kind of calm them down and take away that awe factor. They have 10 sixth-year seniors. They have 10 fifth-year seniors. They have, I think it's 39 players on the roster who have 4 years in the program, or either in their fourth year or been here for 4 or more years. So that's a settling influence when you have that kind of maturity.
And starting at the quarterback position, Daniel Smith, I'm looking at the stats here. I mean, just really impressive numbers the last few years. Looks like 56 touchdowns to only 15 interceptions dating back to 2018 in his college career. Going into Beaver Stadium, obviously a major challenge. It's an environment Villanova does not often encounter. What can we expect from the quarterback, and what can he do for this offense and for the team overall to deal with this situation, because he's had so many reps?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, he's going to have to be the guy that kind of settles things down. And they have to realize they're probably not going to be able to beat Penn State deep. They're going to have to take what the defense gives them, anything underneath in the throwing game. And he may have to run a little bit more. He hasn't been running as much this year as he did in 2019 or previously in his career, because he has such good running backs. But he may have to carry the ball a little bit more in that read option offense.
You got four running backs that are all averaging over 5 yards a carry, product of the system, product of the offensive line, the running back. I mean, what do you attribute the success of the running game so far?
All of the above, and they're all very talented running backs. I mean, I think in any other situation, each one of them could be the primary back, and they rotate them in on series. You know, they'll play Covington one time, Barley another, Jalen Jackson another, TD, whose last name I can never pronounce. You know, they rotate them in So I think that's the key to them, and it keeps them fresh. I mean, they're not a team that we're they're not guys who are going to get 20 carries a game. They're going to get 15, 8 and 5.
When we look at the, you said Penn State probably will not have to face a lot of deep throws here. It's going to be more about taking what Penn State may give them underneath. When Villanova is looking downfield and Smith is searching for targets, who steps up? Because I see three guys with multiple touchdown receptions over the course of the year so far.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Des Boykin is one of them. You know, he's, they, you know, they have some guys that have some speed that can get past, can get down the field. Jaron Harrick is the same way, and Rajon Pringle. I mean, they're the top three guys. He spreads the ball. Daniel spreads the ball around quite a bit, and they have a very good tight end in Todd Summers, although they really haven't utilized the tight end position as much as head coach Mark Ferrani would like. I think they want to try to get the tight ends a little bit more involved, but he's going to spread the ball around. I don't think Daniel has a favorite target.
This defense, 23 tackles for loss through three games, 7 sacks through three games. What kind of defensive attack do you, you say you can't let Penn State behind you, but how do you see them attacking Penn State on Saturday, and who are the guys that you need to keep an eye on?
Well, Malik Fisher up front is one of the guys to keep an eye on. He's getting some NFL looks. He's probably he'll get an invite to somebody's camp because he's big, he's strong, he's fast. Forrest Rhine in the linebacking corps, another veteran fifth year guy. He's a candidate for the Buck Buchanan Award, which is the Defensive Player of the Year in the FCS, excuse me. And then on the back end, Christian Benford at cornerback, he's got 11 career interceptions. He's got 4 this year. So, I mean, I think they're a defense that is designed to stop the run first. That has been their primary focus for as long as I've covered them through 3 different defensive coordinators. And that's they're going to be their primary focus, and then deal with the pass. Stop the run and deal with the pass.
Terry, it's been 70 years since these two programs last played in a football game. That's a long time. And that'll end on Saturday when this game kicks off at noon. What's the buzz around the program right now, knowing that they're playing the number 6 team in the country?
There's a lot of excitement. I just talked to several of the players, and they're all excited. One, Garrett Zobel, one of their defensive linemen, you know, he was recruited early by Penn State, you know, early in the recruiting process. You know, a lot of these guys were recruited by FBS schools early in the recruiting process, primarily like MAC schools and conferences like that, and then gravitated toward Villanova when that recruiting interest kind of waned. You know, they're making a weekend of it. The baseball team's coming up and playing games. The softball team's coming up and playing fall games up there. You know, they've got fan buses going up on Saturday morning. There's a lot of excitement around this.
Yeah, remember some of these names. Forrest Rhine is from Waynesboro. He's actually from a town over from where I grew up, and he came up for multiple visits. I think Penn State wanted to walk on. Des Boykin, of course, from Whitehall, Saquon Barkley's high school, so he was up a bunch. So definitely some familiar names there. I think the elephant in the room here, you know, you're comparing number 16 in the country, FBS, to an FCS program. Do they have the size, the athleticism to keep it a ball game? And you know, do they really want to talk about something of that nature at this point?
Oh, no, yeah, there is going to be a size and an athletic difference, obviously. The other great difference is the depth, the difference in the number of scholarships, where, you know, the FBS, I believe it's 85 scholarship limit, FCS is 63. So you're already at a numerical disadvantage. You know, so that's the biggest thing is that, you know, when you get into those second team guys, the Penn State guys are still going to be much better than the Villanova guys.
And for Villanova, I mean, James Franklin mentioned yesterday a lot of playoff appearances, a national championship not too far behind us. Can you give our listeners some perspective about just how strong the Villanova football program has been at the FCS level and at the Division I AA program for the last few decades?
Yeah, I mean, they won a national title in 2009, beating coming back to beat Montana. They've been to the semifinals several times. They've been to the quarterfinals several times. They've made deep runs in the playoffs. They're a perennial playoff team. They've had ebbs and flow, but they're expected to be a playoff team this year. I mean, after this game, they have a bye week, and then they play JMU, which is the top team in the CAA. It's at this level, they're one of the better programs in one of the better conferences at the FCS level.
And the Wildcats,
how fun is the FCS playoff system just comparatively to FBS?
Oh, it's terrific, because you know it's not just two games. There's 24 teams, and if you don't get that first round bye, you're basically going through five games to win a national championship, and. You know, there's a definite advantage, and you're playing on other teams' home fields. You're not playing in neutral stadiums until you get to the final in Frisco, Texas. So it's a lot of fun. And I mean, I remember I covered the 09 championship team, and that was a lot of fun. And then the next year they got to the semifinals, and they had to do that on the road. They played at Stephen F. Austin in Appalachian State and places like that. It's you know, I want to see the FBS go to at least an 18 playoff. I think that's perfect. Anything more than 8 teams is really watering it down.
We'll stay tuned on that for now. And last question for you, Terry. We'll let you get back to your coverage of your game week at Villanova. I'm looking at the last few games for Villanova. A win over a ranked opponent, Richmond, 34-27 last week, and then a couple blowout wins over Lehigh and Bucknell. What's your forecast for game number 4 for these Wildcats heading to Beaver Stadium? Do you see them making this contentious for some significant portion of the game? And ultimately, what do you think is a separating factor between these two programs, aside from the obvious FCS-FBS distance?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can make it competitive in the early going for a half, maybe even into the third quarter. I mean, I don't put it past this team because – you know, they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. They want to see how they stack up against the big boys, so to speak. I think the ultimate factor is going to be the depth factor and just the sheer numbers and the size and the athleticism of Penn State that Villanova does not see at this level. Villanova's big. They've got good size, but it's not like FBS size.
Terry Toohey, kind enough to join us, covers Villanova for the Delaware County Daily Times. Are you making the trip to Beaver Stadium this weekend?
I am not. We're not traveling. Our sister paper in Reading is covering the game.
Oh, well, sorry to miss you, but we really appreciate the insight here ahead of game day.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Tyler.
All right. We have a better understanding of Villanova now, thanks to Terry. Appreciate him for hopping on with us. It was a bit of a tricky situation trying to make that interview happen, but I'm glad we did make it happen, Sean.
Yeah, hopefully we fixed my audio, but then we just ran into a cluster of epic proportions there. So not really sure which format we're coming to you in, but we're still talking to you in the podcast, which is the original medium. So we got that, and we're here to focus back on Penn State a little bit. Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, Brandon Smith. Kind of a surprise when you take into account watching the game and thinking maybe Jaquan Brisker, maybe Joey Porter, a couple of other guys that were certainly in the mix for Penn State's best defensive player. I will say it's interesting to me. This is the second time that Penn State has had a player of the week. Jordan Stout, of course, was a special teams player of the week in week one. And it's also the second time that player has not been Penn State's staff player of the week. Joey Porter was the defensive player of the week this week. And of course, Drew Hartlob was in week one. So found that to be funny. 10 tackles, tackle for loss, a QB hurry, and a pass breakup that I think he'll be the first to tell you should have been a pick, maybe a pick six. We'll see what happens. But again, Brandon Smith, I think he's really good. I think he's still coming into his own as a player, still flashing. Would like to see that consistency take a step forward. And if he does, man, watch out.
Yeah, in year three, you want to see him make a big leap between game number four and game number 12 on this regular season schedule. But he's got this Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week under his belt all of a sudden. And I'm with you. It was a surprise. I think we listed several names during the postgame podcast on Saturday about who flashed to us defensively before getting to Brandon Smith. But kudos to him. If, believe it or not, the first time in 3 years that a Penn State player has picked up that award, Micah Parsons, never happened. He was a consensus All-American. He was the Big Ten Linebacker of the Year. He didn't win it, but Robert Windsor, the last guy to get that defensive tackle in 2018. So interesting to note as well that Sean James Franklin felt there should have been a Big Ten Player of the Week, and it should have been Sean Clifford offensively. We've talked a lot this week and written a lot this week about what Clifford accomplished on the field Saturday night, 4 incompletions, 300-plus total yards, a couple touchdowns, just one interception. We talked about that, what that interception looked like. I mean, he doesn't. Franklin certainly makes the case here, and it speaks volumes that we're having a debate about Sean Clifford should have been the offensive player of the week after a game against Auburn for the number 6 team in the country. I mean, this is great stuff if you're a Penn State fan.
Yeah, I mean, you're just happy to have this conversation instead of the other conversation that we've had a few times.
Yes.
But yeah, he should have been. I mean, Peyton Thorne, I mean, very impressive. Michigan State, who looks really good, you know, just considering where they were at and where they were expected to be. Peyton Ramsey. But Peyton Ramsey was in the Big Ten for 10 years. But Peyton Thorne going into Miami and winning that game. And Trevion Henderson, who is just a flat-out stud. Now, the Big Ten, you would think, would give him the Freshman of the Week and then work Clifford in there. But who's to say? He deserved it. He should have been in there. They had the graphic made up and ready to go. I think you saw that on Twitter. It's a shame that he couldn't get the nod. But I mean, at the end of the day, he got the win over Auburn. He sort of has righted the ship for now and has done a really good job in the first 3 weeks of the season. He'll have to continue that. But I mean, considering the conversations we had all offseason, to have Sean Clifford in the mix for a Big Ten Player of the Game or Player of the Week after a big game is absolutely phenomenal.
Speaking of Player of the Week, Odafe Owe, AFC Defensive Player of the Week in his second NFL game.
God, I love it, man. I didn't expect him to be this far this fast. I don't think anybody did. I don't even think the Ravens did. But very, very big in that win over the Chiefs on Sunday night. Was that Sunday? Yeah, it was the Sunday night game. And he's been terrific through a couple of weeks. Micah Parsons and Odafe Owe, two of the top three guys in the defensive rookie of the year odds right now. So pretty good start for Penn State defenders, I'd say.
Yeah, Micah Parsons transitioning to defensive end. Who'd have thought that Micah Parsons could play defensive end, Sean?
The rankings were finally right, yeah.
Yeah, and he was impressive. I think he was maybe second among all NFL players in pressures applied on Saturday and on Sunday. And just watched him around. He was chasing around Justin Herbert all day long. Fun to watch him fly around and get back playing football after not seeing him on the field last fall. Sean, it's time for before the mailbag. James Franklin closed the book on it. We can close the book on it. His encounter with the SEC officials is one I'm sure he will not soon forget. And he took some time at the end of his press conference on Tuesday to explain some research that he did and why maybe it ran counter to some of the calls that were made on Tuesday. I can't put it as smoothly as James Franklin, but I'm trying to put it as unfindable as he did.
The best way was on our board where somebody said, "This is my wife trying to explain to me why I'm wrong, but not, you know, not just going off on me." And that one hit home. Trust me,
yes.
That really hit home. And it was very accurate because it was a very nice soliloquy of him going through all these calls one by one. And I thought he did a good job. He didn't complain about like the spot on the muster for fake punt. He didn't complain about judgment calls. He complained about ones that should be black and white flags. And that's where you're going to get your momentum. That's where you're going to get people to get on your side. Not when you're complaining about, oh, he should have been, he should have by the rules not grabbed him. Like the pass interference that the Auburn fans are complaining about. You could go either way on that one because that's just the way the game is played these days. Being inside the tackle box for the intentional grounding, having somebody head up over the long snapper, which is another thing that hit dearly for me. It's just those ones where you can try and convince people that these are black and white calls that need to be made by the letter of the law, not did he get this spot? Did he, did he grab a face mask, touch a face, just these judgment calls. So there's a difference between judgment calls and, straight up should have been penalties. And I think that's the comment he was trying to make.
And he's good to move on with it. We are too. And it's time for our five-star mailbag, Sean. And by the way, I love how he didn't even reference the lost down. Like, everyone just knows how glaringly terrible that was. Didn't even need to point that one out. Five-star mailbag time. And here we go. Through three games, it's obvious who Penn State's starting receivers are. But do you have a better sense of who the next guys will be in behind them as the season continues? Of course, the starters locked in, Jahan Dotson, Keandre Lambert-Smith, and Parker Washington, very front-loaded from a snap standpoint through 3 weeks.
Yeah, those rotations, two of the first 3 weeks, and this shouldn't be a surprise, just completely centered on those first three guys. Now, the answer to this one is Brenton Strange and Theo Johnson. I mean, they've done a great job of working those guys in there. They've had an opportunity to stack them out wide and play just more than a flex tight end. They've actually been playing receiver. So that's the easy answer. In terms of on that wide receiver depth chart, we saw Cam Sullivan Brown in you know, critical spots this week. He's more of a blocker at this point, but he will catch the ball if you throw it his way. So Sullivan Brown's going to be the guy. I don't think we saw Winston Eubanks on Saturday, but that's another spot where they're going to have to develop some sort of or cultivate some sort of depth, because it's not there right now. Jaden Dotton and Malik Mega hasn't been dressed for a game. He's injured right now. So those guys haven't been coming along. Daniel George has been a special teams player, which I think is kind of right along with the expectation coming into the season. Harrison Wallace got onto the field 2 weeks ago against Ball State. We have not seen Leon Clifford yet. So it's absolutely a situation where you need to figure out where you're going to go, you know, after Dotson, or because those guys are going to play all the snaps in big games. There's no question about it. So this weekend will give you a chance to hopefully see more of those guys. I think you'll see Clifford out there. I think you'll see Wallace out there. Maybe see them throw the ball to Eubanks and see what they've got out there in the Division II transfer. So it's certainly I hate to label it a concern, but that's a question mark that you have moving forward this season, because beyond those three, it's not going to be anybody. It's going to be tight ends.
This is where you have that complementary offense that has a lot of fun components, though. You mentioned the tight end room. We've seen two running back sets. We've seen those three tight end sets. So now we've seen a wildcat involved. So there are ways around, to supplement, I think, the lack of depth here. And Winston Eubanks, I think, got a couple snaps against Auburn. But the guy who's been used a little bit more here the last couple of weeks, not a ton, but Marquise Wilson, used more than, let's say Daniel George or Harrison Wallace at this point. So the cornerback converted to wide receiver. We've seen him play both sides, but saw him again playing some wide receiver against Auburn. Saw that the week before. I'd expect he'll get another opportunity to do that at Villanova. Like you, very curious to see if we get a longer look at Harrison Wallace, maybe Liam Clifford this time around. But it's not an easy answer, and it's one that for three games, I think there's a lot of room between practice situations that Taylor Stubblefield is going to observe in the coming months and game day opportunities. You may see some stability come from that second team wide receiver group by the time we get into November, but it's certainly not there yet.
And it's a great pickup by you. Marquise Wilson should have been mentioned right off the bat, and that's on me. He's got that athlete tab on the roster, and I still see him as a corner, so you can't. It oftentimes doesn't move to the forefront of my mind, but that's a good pickup by you. I think Marquise Wilson certainly in that 4-5 slot right now.
That's going to do it for this episode. Sean, you're not going to be joining us the next couple, bouncing out this weekend. We'll miss you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to miss the game. I'm heading out to Wisconsin for the Ryder Cup. Somehow got tickets for Sunday. So sorry, not sorry. I looked at the schedule and it was Villanova, and I'm like, that's kind of too perfect. So heading out this weekend. I will not be on tomorrow. I will not be on the post game, and Monday still up in the air. Probably depends if USA wins or not.
And Sean already let my wife know that she's not allowed to have the baby while he's away. So we're not shorthanded here. And so we'll be okay. We'll get through it. We got another Big Ten week coming next week. We'll get squared away with Sean for that one. We'll find a way to finish strong here this week without Sean. Don't worry about it. Trying to line up a guest tomorrow as we give some final thoughts and previews and predictions on this matchup. I'll make sure I pass along Sean's scoring prediction as well. I think I know which way he's leaning in this Penn State-Villanova matchup. For now, thanks to our producer, Lance Glynn. Thanks to our guest, Terry Tuohy from the Delaware County Daily Times. I'm Tyler Donahue. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and wherever you find your podcasts, and on YouTube to watch each and every one of our episodes just at the Lions 24/7 channel. Take care. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
new CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.